The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and we have some encouraging news on the Green Front lines today. And to tell us about it, we're going to bring back one of our favorites, Mark Reynolds, who is the Executive Director of the Citizens Climate Lobby, in just a moment. In our second half, you're really going to be inspired. Please don't leave the radio dial, or at least your computer radio dial, because Beth Waitkus is one of the most inspiring women I've met in my 15 years of doing this show. Roz Savage is my other Shiro. She's going to be on the show hopefully next week. She's back from her solo ocean row, the third ocean, the Indian Ocean, after doing the Atlantic and Pacific. Got some quality time, face-to-face time with Roz. She's traveling today, but she'll be with us soon to talk about why she did it. Crossed three oceans as a solo rower, all about climate change awareness. And we're so glad that she made it safely across her last ocean. She is going to be hanging up her oars and doing a lot of speaking, public touring, to raise awareness about not only global warming, but also the state of our oceans, which is not so good, and plastic pollution, big problem, and we'll be talking to Roz soon. But my other second favorite inspirational woman is Beth Waitkus. She is in my own Marin County. She is actually literally planting seeds for death row inmates at San Quentin Prison. Prisoners are creating gardens, and that's doing a lot more than just growing some nice plants and making them feel good. It's actually pretty transformative. We're going to talk to Beth about her prison project program, and she really is one courageous woman. Not only does she walk into solitary confinement, death row cells to do her work, but she has really developed relationships with some prisoners who otherwise have been given up on by society, and we'll tell you what she's trying to do to expand her program to other prisons. Very interesting work. But first, I want to welcome Mark Reynolds to the Green Front. I was very excited to see this, Mark. Some good news. Despite swimming upstream in a big way, a handful of House Democrats are actually given another go at a carbon tax.
That's right. Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us how this came about. I was really pleased and not surprised to see that the Citizens Climate Lobby is at least one of the parties behind this effort. Just when people had given up hope of getting any action from Congress, where did this come from?
Well, Pete Stark's office had been working on this for a while, and obviously, you know, you always want these things to happen a little bit more quickly than they can, but we first started talking about this with them last summer, and then it was just a matter of getting all the details put together, and 2 days ago they did introduce the Save Our Climate Act, H.R. 3242, which does a couple of nice things. It puts a $10 a ton fee on carbon-based emissions, and takes the majority of that revenue and sends it back to households as a monthly dividend check, and then takes a smaller portion and applies it to deficit reduction. So over 10 years, it should raise $2.6 trillion. $490 billion of that would go back to for deficit reduction. The rest would go back to households as a monthly dividend.
This sounds like what the Citizens Climate Lobby has been proposing all along. Is it your plan?
No, it's really close to what we proposed. We had the minor differences. We had proposed the first year at $15 a ton and then raising it $10 a ton. So they're starting at ton, very little difference in that. And then the only other minor difference is we have proposed that all of the revenue go back to households. And Representative Stark is talking about a portion of it going to deficit reduction, which is not such a bad idea also.
Okay, so here's a measure that could cut the deficit by $500 billion. That's a big topic of conversation and debate, and there seems to be general agreement that we need to do that. The question is how, and it also could steer some $2 trillion to consumers over a decade. Sure, and not to mention do some good for the planet, maybe even enough reduction in carbon dioxide emissions, greenhouse gases that nature would actually notice. This sounds way too logical and too much of a win-win-win to be actually successful. Pardon my cynicism here, but do you share it, or are you hopeful that this could somehow get through, even though it was 9 liberal House Democrats that are promoting it at a time when we have the media covering the political circus where all the Republicans don't even acknowledge climate change as a problem and out to abolish the EPA?
Yeah. Well, Representative Stark is on the right committee. He's on the Ways and Means Committee, which is any new tax imposed would have to go through that committee. Now, the difficulty being is that the Democrats are obviously a minority of that committee. Their office is not optimistic about it getting out of committee and onto the House floor. So there's that piece of it. But what we like about it is we have been talking about the concept of a fee and dividend approach for 3 years, and this changes the dynamic a little bit. So now we're not talking about something conceptual. We're talking about actual legislation, and so it's encouraging in that way. It's a difficult environment for Republicans who want to be moderate right now. There are Republicans who want to vote for bills that would do something about the climate, and they certainly would want to vote for something as reasonable as this. They're just in a very, very tricky environment, and so we appreciate that. We're trying to, I think as I mentioned last time we spoke, we've been working very hard to try and find Republican co-sponsors. They're just in a tricky political climate to try and do anything that would be courageous on this issue.
Which is why we started America's Green Tea Party, for those of us steamed that they're playing politics with the planet. Once again,
right.
At such a critical stage in our ecological history, it is concern about political expediency. And while that might be understandable under normal circumstances, given the state of the climate crisis, it is discouraging, isn't it? There's reason for encouragement. We'll get to that. But, you know, it is too bad that it still is business or politics as usual to some extent.
Well, you know, there has been an extremely successful campaign by the people whose interest would be in maintaining the status quo and making sure that the oil and coal companies are meeting their quarterly objectives. They used the same strategy that was effective for some time for the tobacco campaign, which is to simply cast doubt in people's minds. They didn't ever come right out and say, no, this isn't, nothing's happening. They just said, but the planet goes through natural cycles. So if you make what seems like a logical argument, it's easier to get people to go for that. And then, you know, you have their other very tough dynamic in Washington, D.C. There's 2,300 paid lobbyists on the issue of energy and climate. So you have a lot of campaign contributions going to a lot of people on this issue. Specifically, part of their strategy is to disrupt what is actually happening with the science. Now, if we do want to get to encouraging news, I think one of the most encouraging things is you have the gentleman from Berkeley, Mr. Mueller, who's a physicist who's pretty much been the head of the denier movement, and he had a new study that was funded, a lot of the money put in by the Koch brothers, and when he actually did the research, he affirmed what all the climate scientists have been saying. So that was almost the last real scientist holdout on the issue. So that's a little bit encouraging also.
That's huge news, huge news. Potentially.
Yeah, that is huge news. And then there's the other piece, which is Australia just passed a tax on carbon. And, you know, Rio Tinto has one of its headquarters in Australia, other than London. Rio Tinto is one of the largest coal mining countries in the world. Australia gets 80% of their electricity from coal. So for Australia to be able to push the tax on carbon in the face of that, it sends a really big statement to the rest of the world.
And the other wonderfully encouraging news was, of course, the speech by Senator Whitehouse.
Right.
And that was, I guess, maybe a week and a half ago. And that is all over the web. If you somehow missed it, listeners, please just Google it and listen to it in its entirety. It's 23 minutes of exactly what we've been wanting to hear from the White House. We had it from the senator from Rhode Island instead. But if only the White House was listening.
Right. Yeah, no, we have probably, like you, Betsy, we've distributed that speech everywhere we can, both the actual, you know, being able to watch the speech and then also the transcript.
Do you know anything, Mark, about what prompted that? I mean, he kind of came out of the blue or the green as far as I was aware. I didn't know he was such an advocate. He spoke eloquently, and if he wrote that speech, boy, he sure gets it. Where did he get, you know, the courage and the content, do you think, to do that at that particular moment?
You know, I don't know the answer
to that.
I don't know the answer to that. We do plan on finding out more about that and trying to develop more of a relationship with his office. We do think that gives us an opportunity to have him sponsor a briefing with the Senate where we can get some additional useful information in front of people in the Senate and their aides. So we do think there's a very big opportunity with that speech.
So was it a surprise to some in the climate activist community that he was such an advocate, or was that always known, he just hadn't spoken out publicly?
I think people understood where he was on the issue. It was just that the poignancy of the statement and the timing of it that I think was so powerful for so many people.
So a leader emerges just when we need it most.
Exactly right.
And there are lots of reasons, as we said, for being discouraged, even kind of depressed and despairing with, again, the political scene the way it is, media being very distorting very much the climate emergency and focusing on the people who are out to make us think there's no problem. And yet we are seeing little glimmers of light, and you guys, the Citizens Climate Lobby, is one of the lights that I shine, always send people to look at, because you're shining brighter than anyone else in terms of solutions. I really love the simplicity of your carbon tax approach, and yet some people say carbon tax, that's going to be more unpopular than a gas tax. Why is a carbon tax, Mark, really the only way that we're going to, you know, turn the ship around and really start reducing the production of oil, coal, and other fossil fuels and really make the transition to renewable energy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, almost every serious economist that you talk to and scientist will tell you that the fastest way to get rid of something that you don't want is to make it more expensive. And they constantly cite the example of cigarettes. And that's across a broad spectrum of economists. So you could even take Laffer from the Reagan administration, Mankey from the Bush administration, Shapiro from the Clinton administration, and you get a consistent message from all of them, which is the fastest way to mitigate what's happening with the climate is to put a fee on carbon-based fuels. They call about something called a Pigovian tax. Pigo, I guess was his name, was an economist who said sometimes there's failures in the market where the market isn't performing as it should, and therefore the only way to correct that market failure is to add a tax. The second piece that all of those economists mentioned is that the way to make that workable is actually to recycle all the revenue back to households so there's not a burden on American households. It would also make it very politically tough if we put a fee on carbon-based fuels and then fuel, electricity, gas became way more expensive for poor and middle-class people. But there's one other piece that's absolutely essential. You know, in terms of what's going to happen internationally, you watch the international talks happen every couple of years, and it's discouraging because the world looks to us and we don't show any leadership. Perhaps what we should really be focusing on is China, because China out-emits us now. And if we could come up with a bilateral agreement and let the rest of the world rally around that, that is probably simpler than trying to do something with the entire world. If we were to do something with China, that would be a very simple process to harmonize a fee put on carbon between the U.S. and Canada, not completely simple, but much simpler than trying to harmonize a cap-and-trade program. So if we were to deal with emissions with cap-and-trade, which has been the other solution people have talked about, it's complicated, it would require a bureaucracy, and then suddenly we have all the potential rising costs in energy because of the speculation in an energy market. So it's because a carbon tax is so simple and transparent, it would be not only the fastest way we could mitigate the issue here, but also much simpler to harmonize internationally.
So it is simple, it is elegant, it is fair, it is needed, the carbon tax approach, and yet it is so politically loaded and so unlikely to succeed. Is there anything we can do, Mark, to help, you know, push this through, or is it pretty much a done deal that it won't? I mean, this is where I wish we had more muscle behind the climate movement, where we could really activate the masses who do, you know, are very concerned about climate and do want to see leadership on this issue and are frustrated because there's been, you know, a big lack of leadership. What would you recommend if people read about this and say, I want to give Congressman Stark all the support I can get and rally people I know who do care about this?
Yeah. So first of all, I don't think this is going to get out of committee, but I'm not discouraged about it at all because it does give us something to talk about. You know, if the question is, what could people do? We are big proponents of people asking their member of the House of Representatives to sit down and talk to them. And that's actually not that hard to do. It takes some work to actually get into a senator's office for most people. But if you live in the district of someone who's in the House of Representatives and you ask for an appointment, it is not hard to get in there and sit down with them. The one thing we would like people to do is go sit down with their member of Congress, tell them that this is important, and ask them to co-sponsor Stark's bill. So if more people would take on the point of view of rather sitting on the sidelines and making cynical comments about politics, rather than doing that, to actually jump in the fray, sit down with their member of Congress and say, I'm going to be part of the solution here, and I'm going to be part of the solution by working with my member of Congress, that would make a very big difference.
You just touched on a very important point. I mean, we've always battled, you know, we in the environmental activist community, apathy. And yet it's gone to a new level of cynicism because government is so dysfunctional. Things are so, you know, just distorted right now in terms of not just the scientific reality getting out there, but just the gridlock that is D.C. So it is so easy for people just to tune out and say, this is not something I'm going to, you know, get involved in. It's politics, or even people who will use, you know, oh, it's climate change has been, like, become political. Therefore, they don't have to believe in it or worry about it. Well, it's become politicized by the very vested interests that, you know, we know are keeping the status quo in place. And so it's too easy of a kind of an excuse, isn't it, for too many people to just turn away. That's why it's so important to get this message out that, no, we not only can we make a difference if our voices are heard, we must, because it's really up to us, the people, or we're not going to get leadership.
Yeah, I think if you're just sitting and you just nailed it on the head there, Betsy, because I think if you're sitting back and complaining and saying, yeah, it's too hard and it's the most politicized it's ever been, in a certain sense, you're exacerbating the problem. So, you know, I don't want to overly simplify it, but you're either trying to solve it or you're complaining about it. And I think the complaining about it just makes it worse. So, you know, our recommendation is always jump in. It might not be the easiest thing to do. It might not be the most comfortable thing to do. But there's a big difference between sitting back and complaining with your friends about why it's not going the way it should, or actually jumping in there and trying to make something happen.
Yeah, just, you know, that belief, it won't make a difference what I do, so why bother? And that's where we get into all kinds of problems, including environmental problems. Why should I recycle? They don't really recycle. Or why should I buy, you know, a more fuel-efficient car? What difference am I going to make? Or why should the U.S. get proactive on trying to control emissions when China is going to leave us, you know, in the dust anyway? That kind of talk just drives me crazy. It's just self-fulfilling.
Yeah, I was watching an interview one time with John Wooden, the legendary basketball coach at UCLA, and, you know, sometimes because of what somebody says, if who says it, it's as important as what they say. You know, in 12 years, he won 11 college basketball championships. Nobody's ever done anything similar to that. So they asked him, what did he say to his teammates about winning the game before they went out to play the game? And he looked at the interviewer kind of incredulously and said, I never talked about winning a game. All I ever asked my people was to give the kind of effort where they could look themselves in the mirror at the end of the game. And that's how I feel about this issue, is I just want to make sure that I'm doing everything I can so that I can look my kids and hopefully my grandkids in the eye and say, we gave this all we had. I think for people who know what's going on, know the size of the problem, to do anything under that is just being morally lazy.
I love that, and I will quote you on that. And you are doing something, the Citizens Climate Lobby, called the Million Letter March. Anyone who might not have heard of that, please tell us how people can partake that way.
Yeah, the Million Letter March is actually a website. It's a carbon-free march, and it's a website where any person can have their voice be heard on this issue. So one of the things that we've discovered in working with a lot of politicians is they are not that responsive to electronic messaging. So we ask people to actually write a handwritten note to their member of Congress telling them why they want to do something about this, then taking that note, posting it onto the Million Letter March. They can scan it in, or just they can go on the website and enter it, and then send the original letter to their member of Congress. So the Million Letter March is essentially a website that gives people a chance to have their voice be heard in Washington and not actually have to have any carbon footprint associated with it.
Great. And any idea how many you have so far who have participated? Are you keeping track?
Yes, we are keeping track, and I do not have that number at my fingertips. It's in the thousands. It's not in the hundred thousands, that's for sure. We would certainly, and we would love at some point that the Million Letter March website is actually a million letters, but really it's what it is simply an avenue for people to have their voice be heard.
Mm-hmm. And are you getting the word out? Is it growing, albeit too slowly, the awareness of it? We're certainly promoting it at our green tea parties and giving people a way to actually do something. Our slogan is green solutions for your house, the house, and the White House. And so that is the house part. It's how you can impact your representative's view of climate change by letting them know you care about it.
Yeah.
And it only takes a minute.
The core of our work is really the chapters that are set up by congressional districts in the U.S. and ridings in Canada. Last year, if you and I were talking at this point, there would have been 20 groups. Now there's 40. And we're adding between 5 to 10 a month. So what that means is every time that happens, you've got a new group of people who've been trained in how local volunteers can actually generate political will. What can they do that actually builds grassroots support? What are the things that they shouldn't waste their time on? So that's really, I mean, the Million Letter March is a great avenue for us, but the major thrust of our work is training groups of volunteers how their voice can be heard and what they can do so that they can successfully engage their government.
Wonderful. And any other information since we last spoke in July that you want to share on the Citizens Climate Lobby and other than what we just talked about, the latest encouraging development?
I think the last thing I'd leave you with is Jim Hansen in his most recent posting said that he felt that for people who really were serious and wanted to make something happen, that we were the organization that people should partner with. So we were obviously flattered and encouraged to get that from someone who we consider the leader of this movement.
And the other leader would be Bill McKibben. Is he aware of the Citizens Climate Lobby?
Oh, absolutely. We coordinate with McKibben all the time. A lot of our volunteers are going back to for hands around the White House in 2 weeks, and a lot of them, I have pictures up on my desk of many of them who got back to went back to get arrested for the tar sands protest.
Okay, so McKibben is promoting the Citizens Climate Lobby and carbon tax approach.
I think that McKibben and 350 is really interested in grassroots support, and I think that's what they'll be doing. McKibben rarely talks, I mean, certainly understands fee and dividend, but he rarely talks about legislative solutions. He talks more about focusing on building the grassroots support, and I think that's the right thing for him and for 350 to be doing.
And they're connected, of course. We need to build the grassroots support for, you know, greener policies on climate change
right.
and other environmental challenges. And that's part of the problem, isn't it, that the our representatives don't necessarily feel that they'll get support behind them or even that there is a mandate behind them for, you know, really taking a stand in this ridiculously politically charged environmental political climate.
Right, and
so
I think
that is
our obligation as citizens to make that so obvious for them is that it's impossible to not vote the right way.
And that is the challenge, and that is the hope, and that is what exactly the gap there that you're addressing with the Citizens Climate Lobby. We know that there is support out there. I mean, even the polls show the majority of Americans, you know, are concerned about climate change and believe we need, you know, action, and we need an environmental protection agency, and we need to continue to have regulations to, you know, protect clean air, clean water. And yet, you know, if you listen to the debates, if you listen to the evening news, there's still very little about the tar sands protest, about energy issues in general, about, you know, the very urgent climate crisis. It's still a little bit too much parallel universes. Still, we need to cross that divide, and that's what I've been trying to do with my radio programs, and that's what you're doing with Citizens Climate Lobby, to really tap into the greater wisdom that we know most Americans have, and the sense that, you know, we're in trouble ecologically, and we really need to address these things and not put our heads in the sand. But it's just getting around, you know, the mainstream media's coverage or lack thereof of the support and this concern, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for all you're doing, Betsy.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for being with me on, once again, kind of short notice, but as soon as I became aware of this effort by Congressman Pete Stark and eight others. I said, this is something I bet the Citizens Climate Lobby is behind. Sure enough, your name was at the bottom of that story, and I said, got to get you on. So thanks for being available, and we'll continue to promote your great work. And
great.
Hopefully
my pleasure.
This election year,
anytime you need me, just let me know.
Wonderful. Well, we'll need you coming up in this election year to continue
okay.
to make noise. And working together, who knows, we might just get some wisdom going. Miracles, you know, have been known to happen, and that's what we need. It's just a miracle of common sense and sanity.
Right.
Voices to prevail in unison to say this is something we care about, it's urgent, count me in. And that's what we're trying to do, is activate people to say it does matter. You can make a difference. In fact, you must. And you certainly are. Thanks, Mark.
Great. Thank you, Betsy.
When we come back, we're going to introduce another woman who I promise you is on the green front lines in a very unique and interesting way. She is the visionary behind the Inside Garden program. Beth Waitkus will be with us right after these messages.